Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Sunday. Today, we got a special guest on the shelf today, Coach Harvey High. He's in a little bit under the weather, so we're going to give him the weekend off. A lot of injuries in the game. Coach Harvey High goes down. But right off the bench, we got Taylor Mays, former USC All-American, is in studio. He's going to take over and try to answer all those questions, just like Coach Harvey Hyde, probably in his own way. If you do have any questions or comments for us, email us, podcast@uscfootball.com, or if you'd like to call or text us, the number is 424-254-9141. We do appreciate you sending in all your questions. We've got a lot again this week. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Google Podcasts now. They changed the names for all these things. Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Megaphone, anywhere you can get a podcast, please subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive reviews. All that stuff is great. Tell a friend. Hey, you got some USC friends in your neighborhood? Just one homecoming, 4114. Let them know about the Peristyle Podcast. We want to let you know about Taylor Mays. Follow him on Twitter, at S Taylor Mays. He's a big social media guy.
Huge. Know. Hello. I'm a huge social media fan.
What's up, Taylor? Thanks for coming in.
Hey, what's going on?
So, you know, just texted him yesterday, like, you want to come in the show? He's like, yeah, that's cool.
Whatever. Yeah, I'm down. Yeah, you know, I was just at home watching the game and on my flight simulator. And so, yeah, you know, if I could fly over there, I would, but.
Nice. Are you enjoying this, doing a little bit more media stuff? Have you having fun with it so far?
Yeah, it's been nice. I think it's been a little bit of a change. As a player, I think you do interviews, and I never really worried about what I was saying. I just always worried about just kind of maybe the etiquette of it, if I sounded smart or if I was just presenting myself well. And then I never really analyzed it, though, exactly what I was saying. So now it's just kind of a different look, and now I find myself watching games and watching the pregame and watching the play-by-play and seeing what they're saying, looking at people in studio, breaking it down, listening. So it's been a whole different experience for me now, but it's been good.
Yeah, good. Well, glad we enjoy having you.
And yeah, it's been good.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard him on any of the stuff we do the Peristyle pregame show that's on KABC Fridays at midnight before each home game. So basically the first thing in the morning on game day, you can listen on KABC 790 AM. And Taylor does a segment with Keely Yore. This is kind of the first segment we've done just together. So I don't know. It's going to be a different experience. It's, you know,
Keely. Yeah, I think we can handle it, though.
Yeah. Keely's got her own style. I got my own style.
Yeah.
A little different. So we're going to start off with, we talked about Coach Harvey Hyde being down for the count. Man, USC on the injury front, crazy. So already going into this game, defensive end Christian Rector was out. Cornerback Elijah Griffin and Greg Johnson both out. Vavai Malapai had the minor knee surgery. He was out. And Palaye Naoteote, the inside linebacker, he was also out for this game. And you're like, wow, that's a lot of dudes.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch.
Yeah, that are out. And then in the game, you lose Manier McClain, the wide receiver, safety Talanoa Hufanga, who, you know, plays your position. You know him well. Defensive end Drake Jackson, who's been an absolute star. And then, you know, you already had Vavai out. Stephen Carr and Marquis Stepp both go down. So you're down to one scholarship running back. And then Abdul Malik McClain, who came in and gets a sack and gets injured on the play. I mean, there's some big injuries in this one.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, injuries are a hard thing because I don't want to criticize anybody for getting injured. But at the same time, I was thinking, do these guys need to drink some more milk? Can we send them some calcium tablets or something like that? Because I just never seen this many injuries. And it kind of just happened back to back to back. And almost like it was a bad nightmare or something when we saw two running backs go down. And I'm thinking, I can't believe that USC is having to resort to a walk-on running back.
Yeah.
At this point.
Was that weird to see Quincy Jonte go in as a walk-on before Keenan Christen, the scholarship guy? Or
a little bit, but I could understand that in a sense that he's been around a little bit longer, so he might have a better concept of just the offense and just maybe a little bit more experience. But I was still surprised because being a true, we have true freshmen playing. We have redshirt freshmen playing. We have young guys playing. So I thought they would have just put him in right off the bat, especially in pregame when they were saying that they wanted to get him the ball a couple of times. But like I said to you earlier, I guess we could talk about this as the show goes on. But sure. I was just disappointed in, you get a chance to go in the game. You're a young guy. Young guys got to step up and make plays. You can't go in the game and fumble the football. And I know we'll probably talk about it in a second, but that's what stuck out to me about that situation.
And it's tough. And you're wondering at that point, because Marquis Stepp came back in for one play, and he was trying to run on the sideline, didn't go. So if you're wondering, like, oh, we're going to put the walk-on in until Marquis Stepp comes back because we want Kristen to be, we don't want to play him, save his red shirt.
That's what it looked like. They were trying to kind of keep him on ice, keep him on my ice to see what was really going on with Marquis. Marquis came in the game. I think they ran him on, I saw a kind of like a, he almost was just a diversion.
Like a decoy or something, yeah.
And he didn't look good. He kind of looked like he was hobbling around out there, and it's just a tough situation. But
yeah. So it's a short week. Obviously, USC plays Colorado on a Friday night. We don't know the extent of all the injuries. Clay Helton said they'll have an update on Monday. So we're recording this Sunday afternoon. We'll have Clay Helton's conference call. And we're also going to do our Tunnel Vision show live this evening. And Taylor will be on that as well. So we'll talk about all that. But on Monday after practice, because they're moving the practice schedule up, normally it'd be Tuesday, we'll get more of an update. Some of the stuff looked kind of serious, like seeing Talanoa Hufanga in like an immobilizer there. Drake Jackson had a huge boot on his leg. I mean, some of these guys are like, I don't know. And the cart, I thought they were going to run out of carts. Like they were carting people off. Keely and Shotgun are on the field and they're like tweeting out pictures of the carts. I'm like, how many carts does USC
have? They got a lot of carts. They got the backup carts. They got the carts from the 1990s they had to get out that are still running on gasoline and diesel.
There used to be a Keyshawn cart.
I remember the Keyshawn cart. Yeah, I do remember the. It was at the. Well, I think it was at the practice field.
Yeah, it was at the practice field. So part of the injuries coming in there. So going into the game, you had Max Williams, the true freshman, starting at nickel. Chris Steele, true freshman, he started at one corner spot, and Dorian Hewitt started at the other quarterback spot. This has been a banged up secondary all year. Even the experienced guys didn't have a lot of experience. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of starts among all of them. I wanted to get you to talk maybe about the job Greg Burns has done, because it just seems like these guys are playing well. They shut, you know, they shut the Arizona offense down yesterday until like garbage time.
Yeah.
They did a good job on Ian Book. They did a good job on Jake. What's it? Why am I blanking on his name at Washington?
Number 10.
Why am I blanking on his name right now? Yeah.
Not
Jacob Eason.
Jacob Eason.
Holy crap.
Sorry. He has a rocket of arm. That was all we were thinking about.
And he had 180 yards passing. So it was like, this is, I think the secondary has done a really good job, and they're not giving up a lot of big plays.
No, I've been very critical of the secondary. I think from the first day that I went and watched our Trojans practice during training camp, I've been critical of them. You know, I thought that we could play better. We could practice better. We could play better. But then I kind of have to take a step back and realize we got a lot of young guys playing.
Yeah.
I went back and watched games from my freshman year where I was a true freshman. We had a couple true sophomores playing and then a redshirt sophomore. So it was a very similar situation. And we were making a lot of mistakes. And of course, to me, I was thinking that we were playing perfect. Now I'm thinking of it as we were playing perfect. But I think Coach Burns has done a great job of really just getting these guys mentally ready to go, because playing DB is hard enough as it is. And we have a lot of young guys out there, and they seem to be playing with confidence. They make some mistakes, but at the same time, they've been pretty consistent. And I think that just shows the level of depth that Greg Burns coaches them to. It's been hard. They've had a lot of injuries, but it is very difficult to get some of these young guys in and get them mentally prepared. Because one of the things I've noticed about DBs in every DB room, they love to ask questions. Coach, what happens in this formation? What happens if they do this? What happens if they do that? And as a DB coach, you got to be able to fire those questions back out. You've got to get guys prepared to play. And we haven't had any huge miscommunication plays downfield this season. And I think that just shows what Coach Burns has been able to do with this young secondary. And when you do things like say, hey, no deep balls, we have to stay on top. If you get caught, go play the guy's hands and try to punch through his hands, get the ball out. They've really been doing that. Guys compete. We could play a little bit better. We could tackle a little bit better. There's some things that we could do as we get more experience. But for the most part, they've done a pretty good job, especially with having the amount of young guys that we have in.
Yeah, you're curious how deep they can go, because we did see when they emptied the bench.
Yeah.
There was some problems.
There was a couple
Big plays that were given up. But yeah, I think it was the last two drives from Arizona, with all the scrubs in, it definitely looked like a different kind of team.
Well, even with Max Williams, there was and this is one single play, so it doesn't mean a whole lot. It doesn't mean nothing. But the play against University of Washington, he was playing the nickel. He punched the slot receiver, and he got about 12 yards depth, sat in the hook window, and it literally was just a perfect drop that a nickel would take. And it just was one play to me, but I was thinking, hey, this guy's a true freshman. I saw that play, and I said, okay, this guy's got potential. He moves his feet very well. He slides. He has good eye checking to the outside receiver and coming back to the quarterback. And you can work with guys like that. So I think that is just – that shows Coach Burns coaching these guys and being very detailed about – because you take your eyes off the quarterback or you put them for 1 second on the wrong person, and that can be a touchdown a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And you really have to be disciplined in where you align and where your eyes are as a DB. And I think our guys are being coached to that level. So it'll be great to see how they progress as the season goes and as their careers go here at USC.
Yeah, just not having a blown coverage. Like, just not doing that is a big deal. If you the touchdown to Tyler Vaughns, he was wide open. Yeah. That's one of your best players.
Well, that was the thing. Arizona's secondary, they had a true freshman playing.
Yeah.
They had some guys that were young, and they really struggled. I mean, they looked – there were a couple plays where I was thinking, what coverage are they running? Like, are they even – the guys were just kind of – I don't know what they were doing. So we haven't had those same issues on defense. We haven't played perfect. Course not, but for the most part we played relatively well when it comes to not blowing coverages, and I think that just shows Coach Burns has really gotten these guys ready and really did the most with what he's had so far this year.
Do you ever feel bad when you see a defense and the Arizona defense was not ranked very high coming in, one of the worst secondaries around, but I felt when I watched them, they've just played better as the season went on. Even the Washington game, they're just put in horrible positions.
Yeah.
The average starting field position for USC in this game was the 40-yard line.
Yeah.
I mean, they were turning the ball over. Washington, their average starting position was the 44-yard line. I felt like, they got 4 3-and-outs to start, and they're losing as a defense. Yeah. Like, how frustrating does that have to be? You've probably been there before.
Well, it's one of those things where you try and – football's a team sport, right? So sometimes, you need your offense to score a couple of touchdowns, and sometimes you need to hold it down for the offense and only allow 7-10 points. But it gets to a point where you just need help. If they're fumbling the ball, like the play on the fumbled punt, offense gets the ball back, and we got to go back out there on defense. Sometimes that can be demoralizing for a defense.
Yeah.
Especially for the big guys up front. They're tired. They want to go to the sideline, sit down, have a drink of Gatorade, and all of a sudden you hear a sudden change. Everybody's yelling at you to go back on the field.
And you're like, crap.
And it can just be a, kind of like a knife in the back to a lot of guys on defense, because you're thinking you have this mindset where you say, okay, I got 2 minutes, 3 minutes on the sideline, I'm going to catch my breath, and then all of a sudden somebody just rips it away from you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
So that's difficult, but I think the great defenses always relish those opportunities where, I think I said this before, it's like being a Navy SEAL. We'll go anywhere. We'll fight anybody. Our back's against the wall, us against you, doesn't matter. We'll go in, be the specialist, do the job, and then get out of there.
Yeah.
So that's really the type of mentality. But it's hard to have that mentality when you have to do it repeatedly again and again and again and again. So
and they played well. I mean, the first four drives for USC, no first downs.
Yeah.
And USC was still winning. So that's got to be demoralizing. You're doing your job as a defender. One more thing on the USC defense first. Kanai Mauga gets the start with Palier. Naoti out. 13 tackles, led the team. He had a sack, two tackles for loss, forced fumble, and an interception. He didn't seem all that comfortable speaking up in front of people at the the post-game press conference, but nice kid. I think he works hard. He's like the captain of special teams a lot of times. So you like guys like that.
Well, need guys like that. And I think those guys are really the heart of the football team. You know, you have your superstars, your Michael Pittmans and your Drake Jacksons and those guys who are going to get all of the fame. But you need the guys that are the hardworking guys who play special teams, who can come in and play several different positions on defense. And those guys really are the guys that make up your entire team. And it was, I guess, exciting to see how excited he got after the interception yesterday. We were talking about I'm all about defenses getting excited and playing with emotion. And our guys were very excited. Our guys were very excited, like jumping around. And I just would like to see more of it, especially when we're talking about turnovers. And we really struggled with those before. Offense was turning the ball over. Our turnover margin was awful. And we seem to kind of get that back. I hadn't seen that sword in a very long time. I forgot what it looked like.
Yeah. So this was the first time. I was saying 19. It was actually – so the last time USC won the turnover battle was UNLV, the opener last year. So there was 17 in a row without winning it. Yeah. So there was a couple ties in there, like the Notre Dame game was a tie. But USC won this one 3-1. So big deal winning the turnover battle. On the offensive side – obviously, a lot of the talk, you had Vavai out, and you're like, is this going to be the marquee step show? Is he going to get over 10 carries for the first time? He ended up having 13 carries, 66 yards, and a touchdown. His longest run was 14 yards, so it wasn't like a huge day for him, but it was nice to see him out there, average over five yards a carry. Stephen Carr, 7 for 33. He had an all right day. He had a 16-yarder there, but guys get hurt. You see Quincy come in there and fumble. He had one carry. That was not probably. But then someone you don't expect to see, who is a San Diego, he's a California track star, one of the fastest players around, Keenan Christen, the true freshman, comes in. 8 carries, 103 yards, 2 touchdowns. He had a 55-yarder and a 30-yarder. And the 55-yarder, everyone was talking about, I guess Mike Jinks said as soon as he hit the hole,
they knew.
He said it was done. They actually talked about like this was a potential if they block it right. And you could see as he kind of was turning that corner, like that safety's not going to catch him. And I don't know. What did you think of Christen come out, busting on the scene?
Well, you need guys like that. And if you have a guy like that can come out of the backfield, it creates a huge mismatch for the defense. We looked at Reggie Bush for years, just embarrass defenses because he was so fast, you couldn't put a linebacker on him. And that's what I see potentially with Keenan. You put him in the backfield, you motion him out. What are they going to do? Are they going to use a linebacker to cover him? Are they going to use a safety to cover them? Run him downfield. Touchdown.
Yeah,
they can't run with him. So I think this game is perfect for him because it gets him the experience that he needs. It gets him the confidence that he needs. And he played great. It's not like his first game was 5 carries for 5 yards.
Yeah,
he came in. He put up big numbers. That really can help a running back, especially a freshman running back, because it just gives him confidence. And now he has a feel for what the speed of the game is like. And I would like to see him be used a little bit more on special situations and give him maybe a 10-play package, a screen play, a wheel route, maybe an angle route. Remember those running backs will run an angle route out of the backfield where they'll push like they're going to the flat and then give a very hard stick to the linebacker and come back inside. It's normally a goal line route, a red zone route. But that's a killer route. I mean, running backs have scored a lot of touchdowns off that route. Like Reggie Bush has scored a lot of touchdowns off those kind of routes. I see him being used as that kind of running back in the future. So I would like to see that more from him.
All right. Before we got to jump into questions and have TaylorMade's answer in his best Harvey Hyde impression. We'll maybe start out that way. But first, I want to tell you about SeatGeek. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. So what if their site's annoying and doesn't have the events you want? Hello, status quo. The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there's a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. In an industry that tends to stagnate, SeatGeek decided to stand out from the crowd. They built the fastest way to find tickets so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. It's a much better process. They pull millions of tickets together from all over the web, and then they'll rate them on a scale of 1 to 10. I look on the interactive map on the SeatGeek app. I love you. You should download it. Check it out. Looking at USC Oregon, the next home game right now, you can see the little green dots where they're better deals. The red dots, not as good of a deal. You can even buy club seats on the app. Check it out. Right now, SeatGeek's going to give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is use the promo code USC. So download the app, use promo code USC for your first purchase and get $10 off. That's promo code USC for $10 off your first purchase. All right, Taylor, let's jump into some questions. We have a text message, and this one's from Rick in LA. He says, "Hey, Ryan and Coach," he means Taylor, "great victory by our team. Young kid who scored the two touchdowns, also a good story." We just talked about him. But I have to ask, why couldn't they play like this last week against Notre Dame? And I know that the upcoming game will be another letdown because that's just the way it goes at USC with Coach Clay Helton. I seriously hope I'm wrong, but the track record says otherwise. The team is playing hard, and I will always respect them for that. But with everyone throwing out Urban Meyer's name as a replacement for Clay Helton, I thought he left coaching due to an illness, so why him to replace Clay Helton? Thanks, guys, for helping us make sense of what's going on. Fight on. Rick from LA. And real quick, Rick, I don't know if you've seen Colorado, but they look terrible. they beat Arizona State earlier, yeah. Which
it's crazy.
The Pac-12 is drunk,
yeah.
I think.
You know? It's hard because you have this team will beat that team, but then lose to this team. So it's really hard to gauge what's going to happen in the game going in because you just never know. I mean, it's just how college football works, and I think it's been how the Pac-12 has worked for a couple of years, all the way back. I mean, maybe even the last 20 years. This is just how it works. That's why, and he's talking about, Rick was talking about why couldn't we play like this last week? Football is just a weird sport. There's a weird mental, psychological aspect that I think affects players and affects teams. You wouldn't think that sound volume, being at home or being away, would make a difference, but it does for some reason. Being in an away game in a charged up atmosphere, little things like that make a difference. And that's where you need a head coach. You need leaders on the team that are able to keep you focused and just with your heads down, working towards the next goal, because there's just a weird aspect about, it makes sense we can blow Arizona out, but we just struggled at Notre Dame. We didn't have the same enthusiasm that we had yesterday, last week.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it's just how football works sometimes. Not an excuse, but.
And sometimes Arizona, and you know, we've seen UCLA look good. We've seen UCLA look awful.
Yeah.
And like Arizona looked awful.
Yeah.
Like don't feel too great about this. Arizona was not – they did not play their best game, probably played their worst game. But you have to give USC some credit for some of that too. But, I mean, they benched Khalil Tate. Like, like you know things are going – that. And the reason, Rick, that people would be mentioning Urban Meyer's name, I think that's a legitimate concern. Some of the people, the insiders you talk to, if he was going to coach somewhere, like that's the question. Would he want to coach again? If USC doesn't have an opening right now, if USC had an opening – and Urban Meyer wanted to coach again, it's a perfect match because you know he's already in LA, you know, doing some work here. But you don't want to go someplace where you can't win a championship. USC is one of the few schools you could win one. But the people you talk to, health is certainly a concern. He might not want to coach ever again. Like there's a lot that would have to happen for that to work. But as far as football goes, he's the perfect hire.
Yeah, he's a hire that and. I'll go ahead and say it. He's a person that if you bring to your school, it just opens eyes to every recruit in the country. And there's only a couple coaches that really have that type of resume where they can commit to a school and become the new head coach, and it really could shake up college football recruiting. He's one of those guys. Yeah. It really could completely shake up recruits, commits, guys could decommit. I mean, I'm not even talking about he could coach anywhere, and commits will decommit and probably commit to the school that he will go to. So there's just a couple guys like that, and I think he's earned that type of resume and respect. And, you know, but at the end of the day, he's going to do what's best for him and his family. So it'll be very interesting to see kind of what happens moving forward. But I think our guys really have to stay focused on what they are doing, because when you look at, you know, what's going to happen to our head coach, are we going to get another head coach to come in? That's when we have the mistakes like Notre Dame's, the BYU's, the University of Washington, where we lose games because we're just thinking about the wrong things, and we have to focus. At least the players have to. That's the struggle.
Yeah. Block out all that noise.
So. Exactly.
You know, the coaches are. They're not thinking about getting replaced, but a lot of the fans are. So that's, we get a lot of questions.
Well, I think some of the coaches, I think that's in the back of the coach's mind, but I don't think they'll ever admit that. But, you know, it's just part of the business that we, but they'll, the coaches will never admit that. But,
no, I mean, they're worried about it. They're worried about getting replaced.
They're worried about it.
But they're not like coming up with names.
No,
like
no, the fans No. They're not yelling Urban's.
Who would be good to Urban's replace
name.
Me?
Yeah. They're not yelling Urban's name when he's doing the pregame show before.
But you're seeing Utah signs, game. Like there's tailgates that, you know, Urban, it's like all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah. But so we'll see. You know, if USC goes on the road and, I mean, you know, go on the road and beat Colorado, comes back and beats Oregon, probably some of that gets quieted down, but, you know, lose a game somewhere or play poorly, and then, you know, you'll hear it even more. Yeah. Funny, Frank in Sacramento wrote a couple emails in. First, he said, who are Keaton Kristen and Quincy Jaunty, and why are they carrying the ball for USC? And then he said, follow up 30 minutes later, well, I guess I know who Keaton Kristen is now. Frank in Sacramento. Well, Frank, glad you got to know him.
Yeah.
You didn't get to know Quincy as well. Just no,
you didn't get to know Quincy as well, but here's the thing about Quincy. You need, I was telling Ryan this before we started this show, any good football team, especially a college football team, you have to have good backup players. They have to be able to come in and maintain the level that either the offense and or the defense is playing at. The thing that was disappointing about Quincy and some of the other young guys who got a chance to play yesterday, they came in and made what a lot of coaches would call critical errors or critical mistakes. We understand guys getting beaten on some 50-50 balls downfield, which is like a fade ball. If they get somebody mosses them or jumps over them, catches the ball, that happens. But there's some mental mistakes. There's some types of missed tackles, fumbles that are unforgivable. And you need your young guys to come in, do their job, and just, like I said, maintain that same level of what's going on previously, because that's what makes great football team. I mean, you're seeing it with all the injuries that we're having. Some guys are one play away, two plays away from being in the game. And that's where taking these little things seriously really comes into play, because what if they're starting in the next game? Or what if, God forbid, somebody gets hurt and they have to finish the second half of a game? We need everybody. And I just think these guys really need to understand how important this thing is. I don't think anybody goes in trying to make a mistake or embarrass himself. But at the same time, if you don't have the mindset that you could potentially be playing in the game, you might only be going to 80% when they call your jersey number and you got to go in. Hey, you're going to be nervous. You're going to be thinking, man, could I have done more leading up to this part? It's leading up to this point. And, we really need everybody, because especially going into this late run, last, you know, second half of the season, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Let's go to Trojan the Barber. He had an email. I don't know if you've noticed this on, I know you're not a big social media guy. On the message boards, there's just a lot of fans who, they want to win games, but they don't want it to be, see, that's why Clay Helton should still be the head coach.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
They don't want to vote against our team, but I get what you're going.
But some of them do, actually. But for the most part, you know, but they're just worried. They want everyone's reaction to wins to be tempered, because they're like, wait, whoa, hold on. Doesn't mean we want to keep Clay Helton as what. So Jordan the Barber said, yes, USC won. That was a good win at home. I'm still not sold on USC and this coaching staff. Even if we go undefeated, the body of work for Clay Helton being in his fourth year coaching the boys is below average. If it were not for Sam Darnold, it would be worse. I think we lose to Oregon and Arizona State. What do you guys think? Trojan the Barber. So that do you know what I'm saying?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
What do you think about what
he's saying? Here's what I'll say. And this is nothing against I watch a lot of news channels, so I was going to say this is nothing against the current administration. I hear administration a lot. This is nothing against our USC's current administration. But I have very high standards for USC football, and I think we are the greatest college football program. Obviously, it's arguable, but I think we're the greatest college football program, and I expect our football team to be competing to play in the college football playoff every single year. I think that should be the standard. I know going to the Rose Bowl is also the standard, but that's my standard for this USC football team. I think what's happened is it's gone down a level. I think there's just been somewhere in the mix of what's gone on the last couple of years, guys have kind of lost sight of that. I listened to Brian Kelly for Notre Dame talk to their players for the game, well, on the TV I did, and he was saying the only option for them is to come back after the game and sing the fight song. You know, those Notre Dame players know they want to play in the college football playoff this year. Every single year they go out there. And I think for our football team, we're losing sight of that. Not that every year we're going to get to be in the college football playoff, but we're USC. We don't back up for anybody. We don't back down to anybody. We are who we are, and I think we should live up to that, and those should be our standards, and everybody else is, you know, they're playing against us. We're never playing against them, and I for some reason, I don't feel like that's the attitude, and I just would like to see that restored at USC. And I just think it gets lost in the mix somewhere in there. I don't know if I think we, at some point, something has to change. And if Coach Helton can't change that, then we need somebody else that could come in and do it.
So there's a lot of the fans that we'll see on Twitter or on the message boards will they'll say the same sort of thing in a different way, where when Clay Helton says, hey, we control our own destiny and all that stuff, it's like, well, this is a 3-3 team. You don't control your own destiny for the college football playoff. You could potentially, you know, go back to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
And a lot of the fans kind of get upset at that.
Yeah.
But, you know, from the Clay Helton point of view, he's always trying to be a positive person.
He has to be.
You know that everyone's talking about, you know, potentially losing your job. So you're trying to sell something that's positive. And, you know, the Rose Bowl is still an attainable goal. And I get why you would try to sell it. But there are a lot of people that get upset. And I don't know if you're in that category where you're like, you know, temper that a little bit. Like, you know, hey, we're not happy with where we are.
Yeah.
If the Rose Bowl is a consolation prize, we're going to do our damnedest to make it or something like that. Like, instead of like, we control our own destiny, almost like that was the original goal to begin
with. That's the whole point. And that's where I think one of the hard things is that, you know, I think some of the language you used earlier in the season was, well, it's an early non-conference game. But to me, every game matters.
Yes.
I don't care who we're playing. I don't care where we're playing them. Every game matters to us because every game is us going out and showing who we are as football players and as a football team and as a university. And Notre Dame game might not matter in terms of the quote-unquote Rose Bowl, but it matters in terms of national respect. It matters in terms of bragging rights. It matters in terms of recruiting.
Yeah.
And you would think as a head coach, I'm not saying that he doesn't take the game seriously because I know he takes that Notre Dame game seriously. But my point is, when you're a player on the team and your coach is maybe telling you that, hey, we control our own destiny with the Rose Bowl, and the Notre Dame game might not necessarily matter. When you get into the game and you get behind, what is the first thing you think? Hey, well, this game doesn't really matter
because it can fall back.
Or do you say, hey, what Brian Kelly's telling his team? There's no other option for us. We have to win this game and we have to push forward because that's all we know. That's what our expectations are as a football program. And you push through like the 2005 USC Notre Dame game where they had to win. Yeah. Bush had to push Matt in because they had to win because that was that team versus, well, you know, we can lose this game and we'll still go to the road. No, that wasn't good enough for them. Yeah. So I think that gets, you have to have the same standard all the time. I don't care if we're playing Notre Dame or we're playing Redondo Beach Seahawks. I think they're Seahawks, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, very
but
good.
You know, what I'm, you know, yeah. Kevin Ellison went there, I think. That's why I knew that.
Yeah.
But that's one of the issues that I have, and it's bothered me for a while.
I remember being in the press room after the Washington game.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of the talk was, where you're trying to be. And I just felt like, you don't always, who cares, like a lot of time what coaches say. But that really sort of, I'm like, man, the fans are not going to like this. Because it was almost like you were overlooking Notre Dame and talking about winning the Pac-12 South. It's exactly. Like, dude, you got Notre Dame.
After you got Notre Dame. And you got to look at recruits, five-star recruits. Those kids want to go to schools where they're going to play, you know, high-profile games on TV. Be ranked, you know, they want to have single digit rankings next to the universities that they go to. Those games matter. I understand in the concept of the players that are currently on the team and things that you can control, maybe it doesn't matter. But to me, it's all correlates with each other, and everything is kind of intertwined in a sense that it's all just part of the same mentality and the mindset, I think, as an entire football program.
Taylor, you kind of seemed like you have like a drier sense of humor. Like there's a, you know, like there's.
I think it depends.
You're a funny guy. I think you someone that can appreciate sarcasm. This voicemail is oozing sarcasm.
Is this Jeremiah from Snake Lake?
No, this is not Jeremiah. But this is along the same lines of the last email. It's another fan that's concerned about. But anyway, I'll let you play it and I'll let you listen to it. Here you go.
Hey, Ryan and company. This is Don in Chicago. Calling after the Arizona game, just a gigantic, huge, huge win for the program. You know, I think we're now back in the national championship conversation, and I just think people need to get off Helton's back. I mean, he's now among the greats. You can talk about him with Lou Saban and Urban Meyer and Pete Carroll and all those naysayers. You know, the fact that USC's had a losing record the past two seasons and all these 4- and 5-star recruits and no tackling in practice. I mean, come on, give the guy a break. Forget them. This is a special team. We are going to win the mighty Pac-12 South. And I just got to say, Alabama and Clemson, watch out. So fight on.
Yeah, lots of sarcasm in that.
Oh, I gotcha. I know. I was thinking at first, and then I was like, "Oh, okay, I gotcha. I get why you gave why you prefaced it with what you gave me." College football teams have their ups and downs. I get that, but you know, that's where at some point it's just, what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do as a college football program? Yeah, I can't say it. Go ahead. Never mind.
Well, I think it's tough because I know there's just fans out there that are so focused on, we need to get rid of Clay Helton. That's all that matters. Yeah. And I just wish, I mean, and a lot of people just enjoy the games and they want to win, doesn't matter. But there's some that don't. And I wish they could. Especially people are like hoping that Notre Dame blew USC out. It's like, dude, you could still get what you want and beat Notre Dame.
Get what you want.
I don't know. It's just it's
a weird thing. Like it's like a. I get where the fans are coming from in that sense, but then at the same time, you should feel guilty wanting your team. And the thing is I don't want any of our. I want the best for our current players because the current players that we like, a guy like Michael Pittman, he doesn't deserve any. You know, I don't want anything bad to happen to somebody like that. The kid works hard. He's a great kid. He's a great player. We don't want anything bad to happen to him. We want him to be able to achieve all of his goals. So that's the hard part that you get alongside with, I don't know, maybe wishing bad in a sense for the team. But I think things will just play out the way that they play out. And I actually have always thought that it's just better to keep the team as intact as you can until there is a big decision to be made. Because I think, you know, the more speculation there is, it just, until the final decision comes, it just makes it harder for the team because you don't, when there's uncertainty, it just, it kind of loosens up the cohesiveness of the core of the team. And like we were talking about, the mental, the psychological, all that, those factors of a football team and players, those things matter, right? And if there's just a lot of question marks, it just creates more issues within the team, just my opinion.
We have a long email from Brennan from Colorado. Holy crap, Brennan. I haven't read through this yet, so I'll start reading. If we get bored, we'll stop. But we'll see. So this is a question observation for Coach. It's actually, he means Taylor Mays.
I am a coach.
Yeah. As these years go on with Coach Helton, I find myself watching more and more highlights of the Pete Carroll Trojans. I grew up during the Pete years, watching them dominate, and something I've seen throughout these highlights and slash games, he says, one, so he has like 6 points here. You don't see Pete's coaches, players on the sidelines acting like fools, running around field for plays or turnovers.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, okay. So you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%.
It seems like on a first down play, their coaching staff can't control their men or themselves and look undisciplined.
You see that? 100%.
All right. So you're on board with Brennan so far. Two, Pete's coaches are all wearing the same attire for the exception that some may have hats. How can you expect Helton to control a team when he can't even have a standard for his coaches? That's a Coach Harvey Hyde thing. He likes everyone to be wearing the same stuff.
Yeah, I can get that.
Do you care about that or no?
I mean, I think it just depends on the team. I think there's some sideline rules that people on the sideline have to be wearing certain stuff. I don't know if that's a Pac-12 rule, an NCAA rule, or a university rule, but there are certain rules that have to be followed. However, I don't know. I get what he's saying.
Yeah.
I think that's a secondary thing. I think we have to look at the primary things and then those kind of, like the trickle effect. And then it leads to this second question. And so it kind of makes sense. It's like in order. You're talking about the first things and then how that leads to attire, apparel, things like that.
All right.
What's the third one?
His number three, the defenses were absolutely amazing. And one thing that's amazing about them is that even if they do miss a tackle, there's another guy right there to secure that tackle if needed. Why can't that be something this defense can do?
What do you want me to answer right now?
Sure, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to answer number one from the beginning, letting you read the whole thing.
Well, let's go back. So number one, he was talking about the players running around like fools.
Okay, so here's my thing. And this is one of the reasons why, and we've talked about this before, this is one of the reasons why I do not like social media. I'll try to go fast what I'm saying. You see a lot of young guys, high school players, college players, post videos of themselves, kind of pumping themselves up, gassing themselves up on social media. And I never really agreed with that. I think it's kind of a weird thing to do. In my opinion, great players don't have to post videos of themselves because other people are going to post videos of the great players.
Okay.
And I think now we're in this society now where people love to just get immediate attention for themselves and they haven't necessarily earned it. I see guys at other universities doing the same. Miami with I think it's the turnover chain, guys with that sword, just things that, and it's not that I'm against new things. The problem I have with it is that I feel like it's not earned. I feel like our players at our university are trying to have, I don't like the word swagger, but they're trying to have this quote unquote swag and do these things, but they haven't put in the work to earn that, you know, not the chance to be able to do it, but you can't do that and be 3-3. Celebrating the way that we celebrate. And I'm not an old school player. I'm not like one of these don't have fun and tuck your shirt in and just kind of be an okie doke, whatever, you know, kind of guy. I'm not that. But to me, you got to earn it and then prove it and then continue proving it every single time you step on the field. And then you kind of, in my opinion, develop your own identity as a football team, as an offense, as a defense, and then small things can come out like we don't have a turnover chain, but just little things and little handshakes, but you got to be winning to do that. When I was in school, if we weren't winning in the Pete Carroll era, if we weren't winning, we wouldn't have been allowed to do any of the stuff that we were doing. We were allowed to do it because we were winning, because we had built that base, that gotcha. Foundation.
Yeah.
I don't think our players have built that foundation, but they're trying to do all these cool things that they see some NFL players or other universities doing, but we haven't put in the work. The university has the credit, but the players on the team, they don't have the credibility, and they need to get the credibility first before they're doing these things. That's the problem that I have.
What about the tackling, the gang tackling?
Well, gang tackling is the biggest one because and that's another thing that leads to the idea of when the ball's thrown, you need everybody running to it. And it's very hard to do. Of course, you get tired. It's just – but somebody – we could walk outside and there could be kids playing flag football and the ball's thrown. I'm going to start running to it. I don't know if they're going to start running to it, but I'm going to start running
I'll follow
to it
you,
because
sure.
it's just – I guess it's just ingrained in me. There's just like a stick of dynamite.
Okay.
The fuse is lit. And then once it blows, I'm going. That's right when the quarterback's throwing the ball, and then I'm going to the ball carrier. And I think our guys have to have that same mentality where, hey, we got to just run to the ball. That's the most intimidating thing that a defense can do and that an offense can see is on film. They're watching, and they see just humongous beings just running full speed and trying to physically intimidate the ball carrier. Just boom, 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 boom. And if we didn't run to the ball back then on those teams, we wouldn't have been able to play. He wouldn't let us. It just, that was the standard that we had back then. That's the standard that a lot of great teams, great defenses have. And I think that got lost in the translation somewhere with this team because I don't see them doing it to the consistent level that not just our team, but just great defenses in general do. And that's not a talent thing. That's all effort.
All right. Brendan, we answered about half of yours, so that's a little too long for an email. So post those on the message board.
But the first question I think was very important because I think it really showed – I think the first question was one of the most important things about this football team that needs to be changed. Not that they can't have fun, but you got to earn the right to be able to do a lot of things, a lot of these – quote unquote extracurricular things, and you have to earn those rights. And I don't know if our guys have earned those. So that's all I gotta say.
That makes sense. Yeah, 3-3. You don't want to see a lot of that stuff. This is from David in Berkeley. Hi Ryan and Coach.
Oh, Berkeley.
Yeah, Berkeley. Hi Ryan and Coach and Taylor. To what extent do you think the flood of injuries this year and last is a product of not playing at full speed and doing live tackling in practice?
That's a hard one because how do you, when I see some of, so from a, well, I'm not a medical, I don't have any medical degrees or anything like that. But in my opinion, when you see a lot of our injuries, if you see guys getting, what would they call it? Soft tissue injuries, like a pulled hamstring, maybe guys hurting their knee, but non-contact injuries. I could think that maybe some of those come from things that could be controlled. Things in the weight room, things maybe imbalances in muscles, things that you could do in the off season to strengthen joints. But I feel like our injuries are a little bit of a mix of both. And it's hard because I don't want to challenge any of our players on the team and say, hey, I know guys that have played with this injury. I know guys that have played with that injury. I know grown men that have cried because the doctor said that they can't play in the game and they'll sit there and cry because they'll do literally everything they can to be able to play in the game because they're so scared of losing their spot or letting their team down. And so I think it's kind of a balance of a couple of those. I think we've had some unfortunate luck this season. And at the same time, I think some of it is just the attitude and the mindset. I'm 100% with going full speed. I don't want like our running backs getting cut or our defensive linemen getting cut at practice. But I think you can go at a high level at practice, especially when it comes to the line of scrimmage, and still be safe. I would do it all the time. Yeah. I think especially, and here's the key point. College is not the NFL. So a lot of these players still need to learn and get a feeling of what it feels like to work hard and to play fast and to practice fast but to practice at the same time efficiently. If you have a lot of young guys who are coming straight from high school where they don't work hard in high school, they think they work hard, but they don't work hard in high school.
Yeah.
You know, the speed of the game is a lot slower. They're getting to USC and they have a somewhat of a watered down training camp. You get into the season and it's almost like we're an NFL team. But the difference is NFL players know how to practice. They know how to get their bodies and their minds into the physical and mental state to be able to practice efficiently and then have it transfer over into being able to play still at a high level. I don't think college football players are ready for that yet. I still think we're talking about building the base. I think college football players, our guys, have to build that base first, especially with the amount of young guys that we have playing. So I'm 100% with maybe not full speed tackling drills, because I think you still have to try and take care of your players. But I remember in college, we would do 9-on-7 throughout the entire season, and it would be very, very physical, and that never stopped.
Yeah.
Maybe the later periods in practice would slow down a little bit, but 9-on-7 was always that one time in practice throughout the entire season where it was very physical. Nobody got hurt. Very physical. We might not have wrapped up and took the running back to the ground on purpose, but we were hitting fullbacks, we're hitting linebackers, D-line, you know, hit real fast, okay, and then get off the block. But just so you can get that punch and that feeling,
yeah.
I think that is very important for an offense and a defense, an entire football team.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back. We got another voicemail and some more emails and stuff. Back in a minute.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. We got a voicemail for you, Taylor. Here you go.
Hi, Curtis from Moreno Valley. Just heard that Clay Helton tapped into the Ravens for some defensive ideas on how to take away a running quarterback. So now we'll never have a problem with a running quarterback. We'll always run that same kind of defense, because even with third stringers, we got a lot of four stars. And our three stars are pretty good, like Keenan Christian, a three star. Are you kidding me? Who can go the distance at any time? Maybe the fastest football player in college football right now at tailback with our receivers. Oh my goodness. I think everybody's in trouble. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
And if you don't, so what he's referring to is after the game, Clay Helton talked about Clancy Pendergast to deal with Khalil Tate. They actually looked at a lot of NFL film against mobile quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson, and they kind of used some of those strategies. So I think they had the defensive line doing some twists and stuff to try to like contain him, and they did a really good job. I mean, they sacked him 6 times, and it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, they got after him, and it's hard because there's the part of football where guys just have to do their job, and then there's the schematic part of football where there's strategy and you do certain things, move guys around, move the D-line, move the linebackers, put pressure on the quarterback, but then kind of keep them contained. And, you know, we're criticizing this Arizona team, but at the same time, we still do have to give our guys credit because they did a lot of things right last night, especially in our front seven. Just looked better than we've seen in the past, and they really did contain Khalil Tate. And Khalil struggled, but at the same time, he's still a very explosive player, and you have to still show up and play. He's not just gonna just because he struggled somewhat as of late doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we're just gonna immediately shut him down. So we still have to give credit to our guys that they did pretty well containing him yesterday.
Yeah, I think they did a nice job with that. Curtis is more of an optimist caller. Yeah. So thanks, Curtis, for that call. Let's go to Ray in Florida. He says, Coach Hyde, or Taylor Mays, how does this coaching staff bury Keaton Kristen at the bottom of the depth chart? This kid is faster than Reggie Bush. They didn't use Marquis Stepp in the first few games. Why? They left the new Thunder and Lightning sitting on the bench. You always say you need to get your best players on the field. Just another example of the stubbornness of the coaching staff. That being said, the team played great. Fight on, Ray in Florida. And I don't know. I mean, Ray, I think there's reasons why, you know, you had three good running backs in there. I don't have an issue with them not playing him. It does seem like what they did, they were trying to preserve his red shirt there. You get a bunch of injuries. But they like him. They got a lot of confidence in him. And, you know, you saw it there.
Well, there's a couple things that happened, especially with a true freshman running back. And I think this is something that a lot of fans don't realize. But running backs have to pass protect also.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think just really gets overlooked. And you put a running back in the game and he doesn't know the pass protections, it can hurt your quarterback. Get sacked, I mean, sack, fumble, he's injured. We've seen quarterbacks go down already this season off of bad plays in pass protection. Obviously, we could put him in, like I was saying, in a certain package and just use him offensively. But there is some running backs are just explosive running backs and they can't pass protect at all. But at the same time, there's a certain level that I think the coaches need to feel comfortable with to be able to put him in the game. And I think he's kind of working towards that. That would be where I would think that. Obviously, we know he's athletic. We know he can run. I would love to see him get matched up against a linebacker and just expose the line. I think that's something that USC fans will be able to look forward to in the future.
Yeah.
Him being used that way. But at the same time, he's got to be able to pass pro as a running back. He's not a big guy. You get a big defensive lineman coming off the end. You know, he's going to have to cut something like that. And that would be where I would think there's a little bit of a gap that he needs to work to close.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I'm not going to be too critical that they didn't play him. Yeah. But some people are kind of looking for reasons to be critical. So
yeah.
This is from our Sergeant Rodney Strong in Fort Lewis, Washington. Thanks, Sergeant Strong, for your service.
My dad used to live in Fort Lewis.
Really?
Yeah, what is that, south of Tacoma? Yeah, Fort Lewis.
That is?
Yeah.
Oh, Sergeant Strong. Let's see if you happen to know Taylor's dad. He says, Podcast crew, it was a good win for our boys. I was impressed with this team, and I'm really looking forward to see how this team plays next season under new leadership. Sure, it was against an Arizona team that played nobody all season long. They did beat Texas Tech. They're decent.
They did.
But you can definitely see the talent. My question is mainly for Coach Hyde or Taylor Mays. In the post-game interview with Clay Helton, he said that the coaches watch film of defenses in the NFL to see how they handle a mobile quarterback. To me, that's a little off because when you are getting paid 6 to 7 figures to coach a team, you should know what to do without copying anyone else. This is USC. We set the standard, not follow someone else's standard, I thought. Anyways, love to get your thoughts. Thanks and fight on from Sergeant Strong.
I do agree with this is USC. We set standard. I will say this. And college coaches, you know, good college coaches, they want to be great college coaches. They do things like, okay, what's going on in the NFL? What are they doing? You know, the NFL coaches are regarded as the pinnacle, I guess, of football coaching. Right. So you would do something like that. Now, I can understand where if they're consulting with NFL coaches during the middle of the season, that could be a little weird because, you know, looking at NFL film, I think it's something that would be done primarily in the off season, not on a week to week basis.
Yeah, hey, that's a little strange.
Go up the chain to check out what they're doing in the NFL. So that's where I would question, you know, is this something that was done in the off season or is it something that's done, you know, just this past week? But college coaches do that. Even NFL coaches will look at college film at the same time and just because that's how you learn. You just kind of looking around and seeing what's going on. Coaches spend so much time watching film, you know, and it's just part of the game doing little things like that.
Yeah, I got no issues if you're going to learn from other coaches and stuff. I mean, that's everyone does that. You're copying other people and
stuff.
You
have to.
We got a couple more for you. Jack from New Jersey, this is about injuries. The growing number of injuries may very well be due to how Clay Helton tries to protect his players. In medicine, there's a concept known as Wolf's Law. Simply stated, bone strength strengthens when stress is applied. If there is little to no contact in practice, then there is little to no, quote, strengthening of bones and possibly other soft tissues in these athletes. We are all concerned about concussions, but a good coach must know how to manage the fine line of protecting the head and strengthening the body. Obviously, Coach Helton has not caught on. Jack from New Jersey. I mean, I think that's tough. Like, it's tough. So hard to know about injuries. Like,
it's tough.
It could be what the head coach does. It could be what the strength and conditioning coach does. But it's not. It can't be across the board. Weird things happen. Freak things happen.
Yeah.
It's just hard to be critical of, like, oh, dude, you got a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
That's your fault.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. The injury part is hard, and I like what he's saying about some of it can be. If you were just a warrior and you were just getting hit all the time, and you're just going to have a mental shield, like a physical shield, and kind of continue pushing forward through it. And I think some of that stuff is relevant to football. But at the same time, it's very difficult because how can you criticize an injury
if
an injury exists? You know what I mean? And that's just kind of where I'm thinking, okay, well, like, we don't want our guys to necessarily get beat up in practice, but we want them to almost at the same time develop like a callus on their hand where, you know, they're rough and rugged to certain small or soft tissue injuries so they can kind of be able to push through it rather than just the first scratch that comes on a Ferrari ruins the car.
Right.
We want to be kind of like a four-wheel drive Humvee or something like that where we can catch a dent. And it doesn't really do anything to the mainframe of the car. The car can still keep going and pushing through. So I think it really goes both ways.
Yeah, interesting. It was funny. I played some friends were in town for homecoming that I went to college with. And we had both played like club volleyball at USC. And she used to play like kind of AVP qualifiers. She was a good beach player.
Yeah.
She had kids. She hadn't played in like 5 years. And we were just peppering the ball, you know, you're passing the ball with your forearms. And if you haven't played for a while, she's like, oh, it's hurting.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But like, it doesn't think, you don't think about it.
So I'll tell you this. Can I say this real quick?
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. There was always in the beginning of training. And so this might make sense going towards his question. This might make sense. During the first week of training camp, I would always have a ton of bruises on my shoulders from tackling. And it would last for about a week, and then I would never have them for the rest of the season. It was the weird, like, it would happen for the first week. Every training camp, college or the NFL, always would be bruises on my arms. And then after that, they never came back throughout the entire season. So it almost makes sense in kind of that thing. Once you get past that initial pain and it's like a training camp soreness and all that, then you kind of just continue to push through it and have. So I've kind of become more of a believer of that question as more we talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure so you're not going to prevent everything.
No,
No. They have all kinds of millions of dollars of doctors or whatever in the NFL. Guys get hurt every day, all the time. They've backed off the practices and stuff. You just want to give yourself, your teammates, your the players that you're under your watch, the best chance to be successful football players, but also do it in a safe way. And
efficiently.
You do get the feeling that sometimes like the tackling is happening in games and then you have to kind of ramp up to the game where you want the practice to be able to help you get there. And I think that's where some of the criticisms are. But now, you know, Coach Chad K said that they had an extra period working on tackling. They're trying to, you know, I think they've made some changes to try to do some things, but you know, you're more than halfway through the season now. You're wondering, like, well, why didn't you do that?
Why didn't we do it in the beginning?
Yeah.
And it should. That's where we're talking about the baseline. It's got to be a baseline as a football player.
Yeah.
And then you kind of work to maintain that. Can't just dig deeper halfway through the season.
All right. We got one last one from Glenn. He's a loyal listener. He says, hi, Coach and Taylor. After watching SC linebackers struggle all season being out of position or missing tackles, and the defensive line not putting up a consistent pass rush that gets there in time, I can't believe they don't try lining up Deote on the edge and let him come upfield like a bat out of hell to wreak havoc, a la Junior Seau or Clay Matthews. I think they're wasting his athletic ability, playing him 5 yards off the ball, covering grass. Hopefully Pendergast listens to your podcast. Loyal listener, fight on, from Glenn. And there's definitely been, you know, him being more of an inside guy seems a little different, but I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I have never thought of him as a outside pass rusher. Not that he can't, but my favorite thing about EA is that he gets downhill. He's the most physical player that I've seen on his defense, and he is really the only player besides Talanoa that just reminds me of, well, maybe not the only, but he's the only one that consistently gets downhill and tries to put his shoulder and helmet through the blocker or the ball. I mean, he does it all the time. And I think he reminds me of Ray Maluga in that sense, because Ray was awesome getting downhill and just hitting anything that moved. And the problem is when you put a guy on the outside, they have to play in a little bit more space. Not that when you play in Mike linebacker, you got to play in space as well. But when you get on the outside, you're talking about pass rush moves. Maybe he would be good to throw in there, because we've had some problems on the edge trying to be able to contain. And I think that EA would be the one person who would, if there was like a power or some type of counter pull, he'll run in there and turn back the ball carrier. But I just think he's better inside because he's in between the tackles, middle linebacker. And I think it really counts for our guys on the outside. They need to look at what he's doing on film and then try and do the same. I think that would be better for our defense.
I kind of like, I liked him in the middle, and they moved him, you know, they put him at the will. I guess he's at the will, and they have John Houston in the middle. Yeah. And a lot of people say he's kind of undersized for that or whatever, but I thought he would be better, you know, as more middle, like a Ray Maluga kind of guy, which you like because he's just hitting everybody. And
you can make mistakes. You know, I'm a lot more forgiving of certain things if you blow the person up, if you get downhill. And I think that, you know, it just sets a tone for the defense. I think that is important for a defense to be physical. And we were talking, one of the questions earlier was about guys gang tackling and running to the ball. And when you have a bunch of guys that are running full speed into the ball carrier, your defense is going to be all right the majority of the time. And you know, John Houston is a little bit undersized, but he's supposed to be athletic and quick and fast. So it just kind of, there's a ton of undersized middle linebackers who are quick and fast, who are all pro.
Yeah.
You know, all of them. I mean, it's, so we have the potential with the linebackers. They just need to be a little bit more consistent in what they're doing.
All right. Taylor Mays, former USC All-American, has been doing great work here. I think, you know, the last couple of months you've seen him on some of our shows or you know, videos or podcasts, and doing awesome work, Taylor. So hopefully this has been fun for you. Yeah. Good stuff. He doesn't like to talk about himself too much. But,
that's what I'm saying. You got to earn the something, and then you got to keep proving it. So
yeah. Well, I think you're doing a great job. So thanks. I do appreciate you coming in and pinch hitting for Coach Hyde. So
You know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Good stuff. So we'll thanks so much, everyone, for listening. Yeah, we went a little over an hour. Pretty good. Lots of great questions. Thanks for sending those in. Hope you guys enjoy the short week. And if you're making the trip to Colorado, have fun there. We're going to have a whole crew out there in Boulder. So should be fun, interesting, probably pretty damn ass cold.
It'll be interesting for us.
Yeah. So we'll see about that. But that's Taylor Mays. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. And we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.